But it's with great pleasure that I introduce Chad Harris. Come on up, Chad.
Probably gonna cry. My name's Chad. I'm an alcoholic. And today I'm a pretty good guy. And I'm gonna get to that part of it here in a sec. I love AA, and I love all you men. And I'm going to get to that here in a minute, too, because that wasn't part of my story when I first got here. Excuse me. I'm a Zoom baby. I got sober on Zoom. I've done a whole herd of meetings. You know, I had a couple meals with Tennessee recently, and thinking about Tennessee, man, I have a feeling right now if he was me, he'd say, you know, I'm more nervous than a kitty cat in a room full of rocking chairs. You know how he talks and it's tells him stories, and I need that, you know. I need that right now. I called a bunch of people. You know, I was taught not to pray for myself, and so, you know, I've prayed for the snow to melt in Louisville, Kentucky, and I've prayed for Sonic Jets and everything else to get that guy here. But I guess this is my this is my deal, right? You know, somebody told me earlier that I was made for this, and you know, my sobriety has evolved through the time. And on August 3rd, 2020, at 7:27. And I apologize now if I use any profanity. I'm going to do my best to not. But some emotions, you know, the F-bomb is about the only thing that I know. And before I worked step 6 and 7, I was leading a meeting, and this guy counted up, and I said the F-bomb 37 times in a 10-minute lead. So I'm going to try real hard to stay away from that. But, you know, I was sitting on the toilet at 7:27, and before I got sober, I try to quit drinking every day. I try to quit drinking every morning. I try to quit drinking every day at lunch. And I try to quit drinking every night. And somehow that 12-pack and the bottles just ended up in my pocket. You know, I'm not a bar alcoholic. You know, I drank straight out of the bottle. But I drank in my bathroom living by myself because I was hiding it from who? You know? So, 7:27 in the morning on August 3rd, and I've tried to repeat this process and I can't, but I Googled how to quit drinking, and AAintergroup.org came up, and the first meeting that was on there was boozers and bathrobes. And I thought, well, hell, that sounds about right, because I'm a boozer on the toilet, right? You know, so I might as well go to boozers and bathrobes. And I signed in and I went there, and these people were laughing, you know. And I hear these gentlemen talking about in-person meetings when they pull up in the parking lot, and these people are laughing and they're having a good time and they're slapping each other on the back and they're, you know, playing grab butt or whatever you want to call it, and they want to be a part of that, you know. They want to be a part of that, and I wanted to be a part of that. I didn't turn on my camera, I didn't share, but I wanted to be a part of that. And you know, normally I'd drink 3-4 beers and take a shower, and then I drink 3-4 more, and then I take another shower to wash that off before I go to work. And of course, on my way to work, I'd stop by the convenience store, so then I have to go back home and take another shower. You know, and before I knew it, it was like 11 o'clock, and I'm showing up at work, and I'm thinking, as long as I'm not weaving while I'm walking in the door, I'm going to be okay. And nobody will know because I'm drinking in my bathroom and I live by myself, right? And it just wasn't the case, you know. But I started drinking when I was really young, and you know, well, as I was thinking about this today, I thought, well, if I talk about, you know, all my arrests, I had over 60 arrests, so I mean, that's going to take up to 60 minutes right there, and that's going to be a piece of cake. But I don't want that to be part of my story. And if I tell you guys that, you know, I've probably done 8-9 in-person meetings in this journey in sobriety, but before that, I probably did about 8 or 9, and I learned how to forge your guys' signatures. You know, and I would take those papers to my parole officers and my probation officers, because I have 12 felonies and I've got 3 TDCJ numbers, 3 prison numbers in the state of Texas. And, you know, I've been in an 8-month peer modality behavioral modification program, you know, but nobody told me I was an alcoholic. They just told me I had a problem, you you know, and I don't think I was ready to listen to anything that they said about how to fix that problem. And I've got three marriages. I got two kids that are married, that are 3 months apart, and I was married to both their moms when they were born, so you go figure that one out. You know, somebody was talking earlier about having four wives and one kid, and I almost pulled that off. I just have three wives and two kids. But and I have a beautiful lady that's in my life right now, and she's excited that I'm here too. You know, and she's in my corner. She's met Steve, met his wife. You know, and to think that these gentlemen would invite me to come hang out with them, you know, in California. You know, I met him on Zoom, and somebody was talking about that unconditional puppy love, and I have that, man. I thought I was coming down here to set up some chairs, maybe drive Steve around, and I wasn't expecting this deal at all. But, you know, when like they said, you know, if they ask me, then the answer is yes. And when I came down here, everybody kept asking me, well, what are you going to do? Well, no, Steve has a sex workshop, but, you know, I'm like, well, I'm sure it's not a three-day-long sex workshop. I mean, you know, we're pretty sick, but it's not going to be all about that for 3 days. So, but I didn't ask. I didn't ask what's going on. I didn't ask what to bring. You know, one time I was like, do I need to bring a towel and some bedding? No, just show up. And so I showed up. And that's what I do today. But, you know, I never did that before. I was trying to figure out to share with you guys all my times of sobriety before, you know, and there's several of them, but they were all from a power greater than myself, and that was the state of Texas during all those arrests, you know, and I got 8 months here, 25 and a half months there, and I used AA to move contraband around the unit, and so I never really got anything out of it until that first meeting. And that first week, I was so afraid I was going to drink that I just did meeting after meeting after meeting. And before that week was over with, I had 92 meetings in my first 10 days. And so these guys think that it's a miracle that I got sober on Zoom. But, I mean, I'm going to all these meetings and I'm listening to you guys. And I used to say that I stole everything that you guys would say. You know, just like I said that I love you men and I love AA. I heard somebody else say that, you know, but I didn't steal it from them. I learned it. You know, and I'm going to talk about relationships a little bit, but, you know, some of the stuff that I'm going to say up here, because I am a Zoom baby, may not be your cup of tea. And those of you that got sober at in-person meetings, you know, this gentleman right here asked me about it earlier, and I don't know how the hell y'all got sober at a in-person meeting, because I'd have had to drive by too many damn liquor stores on the way there. You know, there's no way I'd ever made it to the meeting, so I'm really surprised by that and my deal. But me and my sponsor have this deal, and we talk about, and I guess I started it, but, you know, I asked him if he's winning, and so he asked me a lot if I'm winning. And on page 14, Bill talks about a feeling of being victorious, and it's all I want to do today is come in second. You know, there was a couple gentlemen earlier that got up and introduced himself, Danny and I believe Jeff, and I just want to come in second behind you guys today. You know, if you need anything, I've got that unconditional love that I want to give to you, whatever I can give, you know. So hopefully if there's something that I can share with you today or that you can get out of this, then you're going to be the winner, and I'm going to come in second, and that's my goal through this deal. So and hopefully I'll quit shaking here in a minute. And won't say too many ums and won't say any cuss words, but you know, on the second page of the big book is the first promise. It's not read in the promise, or the first promise to me, and it said many men and women, thousands of men and women got sober, and that was the beginning of it right there. Is this thing really possible? And so as I went through those 10 days, I finally fell asleep after about day 7, and it didn't become any more about a fear of not drinking that day. You know, I had a feeling I was going to make through it, but it was a matter of staying sober and what to do. And so I want to read this one part out of this deal, and I kind of switched this up a little bit, but I haven't really heard them read this in here, and I know that they will at some point in time. But on page 164, it says, "See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others." This is a great fact for us. And these gentlemen have said it, and I can't believe I'm up here speaking, but this deal this weekend is a great event. Me being sober today is a great event. You know, these gentlemen that traveled all the way here is a great event. And it says in capital letters after that, it's a great fact. I mean, this is happening. This is real. You could have told me 18 months ago that I would be up here tonight. You know, and in one of my first few meetings, some guys wearing a coat and a tie, and I'm like, I'm not ever getting dressed up and talking in front of anybody like that. You know, I don't even understand that. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to be real. I wear my shorts. I wear my t-shirts. My hair's all messed up. If you guys could see the picture I showed these guys at breakfast the other day, man, my beard's all out here. I never combed it. I didn't shave it. I didn't nothing, you know. And that's who I was going to be, but that's not who I want to be today. And that's definitely not how I want to represent Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's not how I want to represent sobriety. So, anyways, I started drinking when I was about 7. It was the first drink that I had that I know I drank before that, I'm sure, but that changed my life. You know, my mom was having a dinner party. I was drinking wine all night. You know, after my parents got divorced, we moved to Rio Doce and lived with the hippie communities for a while, and it was cold duck and I'm sure marijuana and everything else out on the streets in Rio Doce, New Mexico, and that was just kind of around us. So by the time that I got into high school, I was a daily drinker. You know, and in Texas back then, the drinking age was 18. And they didn't really ID anybody, so it was no big deal. I drove a little yellow Pinto. We sealed up the whole trunk, and it was full of beer all the time, and off we went, you know. I thought I was going to be a rock star or a professional golf player, you know, some deal like that. And, you know, I was going to have the whole world figured out. But, you know, that's when all the relationships started to go away. And I think as my sobriety evolved, just like I talked about, and I wanted to be like you guys, somewhere along the way, I got a relationship with another gentleman. He wasn't my sponsor yet, but he was the first one that remembered my name, and he asked me back. I went to this meeting on Zoom called Nooners, and this guy named Alcoholic Vince was speaking. And I couldn't share in the chat. You know, I love the chat when it's open. I know a bunch of you guys aren't into all that, but that's my secret meeting within the meeting. You know, that's when we pump each other up. That's when we hit each other up and talk behind the scenes. And that thing was shut down, so I had to contact the lady. And I was like, man, can you have this guy give me a call? And he did. And he said, I'm going to this meeting at Open Door, called Open Door, in a couple hours, 4 or 5 hours. And I'm like, I'll be there. And he sent me the numbers, and I went, and I'll be damned if he didn't show up. But I have a sponsor, and my sponsor has a sponsor, and I'll get to that in a minute, but that's important to him. And my sponsor is an American League alcoholic, and he asked me to go to the next meeting, and he asked me my phone number. And the next meeting was Knuckleheads, and it sounded perfect, you know. I'm a knucklehead. I might as well be in that meeting as well. And so the next night he invited me to another meeting, and it was Claremont Men's, and they were celebrating their 35th year. They were reading the history, and I was just blown away that somebody could invite me, a person like me, to this special event. You know, I figured I would be excluded from something so real like that, and those guys sharing so honestly and crying and full of love. And I wanted a part of that. And there's this guy named Bill D, and he asked me my number. And the next morning he sends me this text. It's a picture of Hulk Hogan with all these rainbows around him and all this shit. And I was like, why is this guy sending me these weird pictures? I don't understand this stuff. And he kept sending them to me every morning. And he became my first sponsor. And he's on his spiritual journey now. He's a Buddhist. So, but it was great. But in the meantime, I kept talking to American League, and I went to another meeting, and Steve Orr asked me for my number. Or he might have stole it from American League. I'm not really sure. But he calls me on that next Sunday or Monday, and we just have a conversation. You know, and I'm not used to anybody calling me, except for unless it's a customer that wants something, and I want to know why they want something from me, and I don't really want to talk to them anyways. So I began to build this relationship with these men. And I get a sponsor, you know, in relationships, nothing that I ever had a clue about before. You know, I didn't know how to handle them or what to do with them or how to react to them, you know, and I just kept it off. I was used to hiding in my bathroom. And even being here, I want to be that guy that everybody talks about out there hugging that palm tree. You know, I want to be on my phone, but other alcoholics won't let me because I do all these meetings and stuff, and they found that out. And so every day I get somebody asking me, what's a good meeting to go to? What's the next one to go to? And I've already been to two today because I went to them with other alcoholics, and I've built that relationship to them with them. But that's not the most important relationship that I learned to build. But I learned to build relationships because these gentlemen took a chance on me, or they called me, or at least I thought they were taking a chance on me. But I started building that first relationship, you know. And to get back to Zoom, I want to read a section out of the fourth edition because you guys that talk about Zoom, at first I used to get really angry about it, you know, and I couldn't understand why anybody would put it down because, you know, that's my deal, that's my people, but my people are all of y'all, you know. And when I first started chairing a meeting, secretary in a meeting, and I had to read the preamble, it finally dawned on me, you know, I've got a primary purpose. That's all I talked about for like 3 months. I've got a primary purpose. It's to stay sober and help another alcoholic achieve sobriety, you know, and I kept talking about that constantly, you know, for a couple months. I was so excited, you know. I always thought that I was going to have this house with a white picket fence and I was going to be successful. You know, when you're a kid, you think that, or I did anyways, you know, that I just wanted to live a passionate life full of joy, right? You know, I was going to have this house on this mountain, and I was going to have a helicopter that my mom was going to fly in so I could see her, you know, and that was the only relationship that I needed, you know. But things changed, and I started drinking, you know, and as I drank, I got further away from that little kid and that person that I was really meant to be. But it says in the fourth edition at the very beginning, in the foreword, it says, in any meeting, anywhere, AA members, alcoholics, share experience, strength, and hope with each other in order to stay sober and help other alcoholics, modem to modem, which that was in 2000. I mean, that's Zoom, you know. I mean, they were having chats. In 39, they were writing letters to stay sober, you know. So Zoom, what's the difference? It's just a higher technology, you know. Modem to modem or face to face, AAs. Alcoholics speak the language, you know, of power. It's power and its simplicity. And that came through to me, and I needed that, man. I needed that, and I had to have it. So I'm so grateful for Zoom, you know, and I'm a huge proponent of it. And, you know, I do a meeting. I do several meetings. I keep thinking that I don't do very many meetings, but my sponsor does a bunch of meetings, but I probably do about 4 meetings a day. And it's because of Zoom. I'm able to plug in at lunch. I'm able to plug in after work, you know, and I get invited to other meetings, and I try not to ever say no when that happens. So those relationships have grown, and with that, I started building a relationship with a higher power, you know. Excuse me. But so when I was 18, 2 weeks after my 18th birthday, I got my first felony. And I was drunk. I've been arrested over 60 times. All of them except for one, I was drunk. And the one time that I wasn't drunk was I was walking out of county jail and the next county arrested me and hauled me to their county. So I can't really count that one as being drunk, but all the other ones were. But we got drunk. It's right after my 18th birthday, and I stole a motorcycle, and we were out joyriding. I was going to return it. I didn't really steal it, you know, but the judge didn't see it that way, and the cops didn't see it that way. But I mean, I had no plans on keeping it. I wasn't going to sell it. I was just out having fun for the night. But anyways, that started my journey through the Texas Texas correction system or whatever. I got put on probation. And in August, I went to school at Texas Tech. And my very first day there on my motorcycle, because I was bought a motorcycle, since if I was going to steal one, my dad figured he might as well buy me one. So I go to college, and I have my motorcycle. And the very first night there, I get my first DWI for going 5 miles per hour down Broadway, if anybody knows Lubbock, Texas. don't really remember much of that, other than waking up in jail and calling my dad to bail me out. But nobody thought that I was an alcoholic at that point in time either. So I managed to take off and dropped out of school because I was too embarrassed to go back, and decided I was going to be a ski bum, and went up to New Mexico and got my second DWI, you know. And I was just that lonely person still when I drank. I just wanted to belong. I wanted to be somewhere, you know. So I guess I grabbed the keys and I was eager to jump in the car and go be a part of something, you know. So that was my biggest problem, is I didn't want to be alone when I was drinking, so let me drive somewhere. And through the years, that turned out to be a big pattern. And that pattern ended up being where I had two DWIs in New Mexico, one DWI in Colorado, two in Minnesota, and seven in the state of Texas. So I have seven felonies and three prison sentences, and they're all alcohol and drinking related. And so, but, you know, through the years, I didn't think that I was an alcoholic either, because I didn't drink in the morning, and I didn't drink by myself, and, you know, I didn't drink alone, and, you know, going to prison and losing all my stuff wasn't that big of a problem, because I played prison well, and when I got home, I could earn all my stuff back. You know, I always managed to bounce back real well for a little bit, and I always managed to do well at jobs and shine for a little while until I would blow it and screw it up by being drunk and everything else. So on August 3rd, it came down to, just like on page 152, someday me, the alcoholic, will be unable to imagine a life with alcohol or without it. Then he, me, an alcoholic, you know, will know loneliness such as few do. I will be at the end, at the jumping off place. I will wish for the end. And that's where I was. I couldn't drink myself to death. I've been trying. I didn't want to wake up every morning, but I did. And my life was consumed by alcohol, you know. And I didn't know how I'd gotten to that place, or what had happened over the years for me to get there. But I wanted to quit desperately, man, and I kept trying to. And these guys that go in and out, I get it, man. I mean, I get it. I just wasn't going to AA, but I was doing the same damn thing every day, you know. There was no way in hell that I would have got... If I was going to in-person meetings, there's no way in hell I'd have got 30 days, you know, because I couldn't just sit down and be plugged in. I couldn't be a part of. I couldn't sit in my chair and hide, but listen to you guys and get the story and realize that I wanted what you had, you know. I had to have that. But my second sponsor, I'd been speaking with for a while, and he was kind of my secret sponsor in a way. You know, everything that my first sponsor was telling me to do, I kind of ran by my second sponsor. And then when my first sponsor took off for his spiritual journey, then it just kind of opened up the door to my second sponsor. And we managed to get up to step nine, and I'll be forever grateful to that guy. And I still talk to him when he's not in temple or whatever it is he's doing, house sitting or whatever. But he had a life at that point in time that I wanted. I didn't want all his stuff. He lives in a truck and he travels and he lives a minimalist life, and that was everything that I needed or wanted at that point in time, because I didn't want all this shit around me, all this stuff around me that was meaningless, you know, at that point. I wanted to live that passionate life, and that life full of joy that I can remember when I was a kid living, you know, when I hit my knees and I prayed for other people, and I never prayed for myself. I prayed for my grandparents, and I prayed for my mom, and I prayed for my dog, you know, but I didn't pray for myself, you know. I didn't pray, God, get me out of this or any of that stuff. So I wanted to get back to that deal, you know. And so I started building that relationship with that secret sponsor that ended up becoming my sponsor. And that was a great deal. We're in meetings together every day, usually about three, but definitely two. You know, I'm in South Africa every day at lunch. Every Saturday I'm in London. Today I was in Key West in between everything that was going on. I'm in Cabo San Lucas several nights a week, and I'm in constant contact with those guys. But all those people have members all over that come to those meetings. and all those people are a huge part of my life. I was talking to my friends in Cabo just today, and I'm able to do that through WhatsApp, through Zoom. But they're alcoholics, man, and they have my back no matter what, you know. And when things come up like today that I'm scared, I was scared. I'm still scared. And I don't know how to deal with this fear sometimes, and it's an unrealistic fear, right? You know, my sponsors just tell me, tell your story. It's the truth. Tell them what you have. And I'm like, it's going to be all over the place. And I can tell already it's all over the place. You know, I had the greatest speaker meeting in my mind all day long. Man, you guys were going to be you guys were going to be flipped out. I was going to step up to the podium and tell it. I was going to pound my fist, and I was going to get you guys excited about Zoom, the ones that say, no, I'm not going to go do the Zoom deal. But it's important because the newcomers are coming in there all the time. By droves. You know, I see them. Some meetings I go to are really weird. One's called Guts. It's late at night, but the newcomers are there. And they just want a chance. They just want to learn how to get sober. They just want somebody to tell them that it's going to be okay. You know, that you can get through this tonight. Just don't drink for this. Just don't drink till morning. Don't drink till lunch tomorrow. And then let's revisit it. And that's all that they want. They just want to know that it's possible. You know, and they're not going to be able to go out to an in-person meeting right now. And I'm really lucky because I have these guys. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. They were up here on the screen a little while ago. They're all around here. You know, I've learned to do this shoulder to shoulder with them, but I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. And they're the ones that are showing up in these Zoom meetings, letting me know that it's possible. You know, I don't remember my first 30 days, but when I took my 90 day, I was in San Diego to do my fifth step. I flew out there. I'm willing to go to any length to get this deal, you know. And I don't know if in Florida and Georgia and what they say. I know Texas doesn't have it. But California has this third step deal, man, that these guys do. And it's really powerful. Somebody was talking about it the other day. Laid out the big book. We read the third step. But I'm going to tell you what else they do because it's kind of a funky deal. And I wasn't prepared for it because I flew out there and I thought we'd already done the third step. And we're in Balboa Park, even though it's during COVID. And it's kind of like being at the entrance to Disney World for you guys that live in Florida, I guess. You know, there's all these flipping people walking around. And there's all these tourists and they're everywhere. And my sponsor says, let's redo the third step prayer. I'm like, yeah, not a problem, man. I got this down. I mean, I've been learning how to memorize this prayer and everything. And he opens up the book, and we're right out there at the entrance to Balboa Park, and there's people walking everywhere. And he wants me to kneel on the ground with him and hold hands and say the third step prayer. You know, and I've heard stories about these guys doing this in Denny's and all these different public places, and it's a thing that they got in California, and I hope you guys got it in Florida. And if you don't have it where you're at, I suggest that you do it, because I went on to do my fifth step that day, but the most powerful part was when I got up from saying that third step prayer with my sponsor and doing that third step. You know, and then to be able to go into my fifth step after that, I knew anything was possible, and there was no fear. You know, there was no secrets that I had. I could talk about shooting the old man with the wrist rocket when I was a kid and not have any qualms about it, you know. I could tell him those secrets that I wasn't going to tell anybody else, you know, about bullshit that happened in prison and everything else and the fights and the horrible things. But, you know, it's like everything went away after I'm kneeling in Balboa Park with another man holding his hand saying this prayer out loud. And that was the beginning of the most important relationship. You know, that was the beginning of the relationship with my higher power. And, you know, I say the same prayer still. Early on, I heard my secret sponsor say that he hits his knees every morning, and he says these four prayers, and immediately I was like, man, if you got 37 years sober, I want to know what those four prayers are, because they're going to take me there, right? But, and that was before he was my sponsor, and I started saying those. And he says, every morning I wake up as an untreated alcoholic. And I said, you know what, man, I'm going to throw in the preamble on that too, because I'm going to rejoin Alcoholics Anonymous every morning. You know, I don't want to leave that deal out. And I do. I still say it. I still do those four prayers. And I still say the preamble every morning. And then I go brush my teeth. And then all of a sudden I'm going to fix the whole day. Right? I'm going to fix all my employees. Everybody's going to do exactly what I want. And this is going to be a great, magical day. You know? And the next thing you know, in a flipping meeting or I'm calling my sponsor and he's like, have you paused? And I'm like, hell no, I haven't paused. I got to make this whole day right, man. I'm going to make all these people happy and all this stuff is going to be awesome. And then I got to pray again. And I got to proceed. You know, and then maybe I got to go run an errand and I start having this conversation in my head. And I really thought I was going crazy and I had ADD. I even talked to my doctor about it. I was like, man, you know, maybe something's really wrong. I'm not drinking anymore and I'm just not thinking straight because I'm talking to myself all the time. And I'm scatterbrained and I can't get anything straightened out. And I was talking to John about it and I realized I'm actually kind of praying throughout the day. And it's not so much that I'm praying for others or I'm praying for myself. I'm just kind of looking for a little bit of guidance because I'm trying to control this show and I just can't do it. You know, what the hell's going on in my head? You know, I'm trying to look around me and see what I can fix and I still blow it, man. I still blow it even today, being surrounded at this workshop with all you men. But it's okay because when that anger and all that stuff comes up, it only lasts for a little bit. Or I know that I'm able to pick up the phone or get on WhatsApp or even today at my most nervous part. That's why I was in Key West this afternoon at their noon meeting because I just needed to hear another alcoholic share. You know, I just needed to hear somebody say, hey, my name's Dave and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm surrounded by all of y'all. But sometimes I used to think that in a meeting, that was my perfect hour. That was my safest place. That's where I needed to be. But I actually think that my perfect hour is in the morning while I'm saying those prayers, while I'm creating that relationship, you know. It's not the one that I look forward to the most, and I've forgotten to do it a couple times, and I've paid the price. And I'd like to say that at the middle of the day, you know, I've heard other people say, man, I stopped and I prayed, and I didn't, you know. I went on through the whole freaking day because my next best moment is at 6 o'clock my time. And I look forward to it because that's when I call my sponsor every day at 6 o'clock. Every day for 10 plus months, I've called my sponsor. Sometimes we don't talk about much of anything. You know, usually I ask him if he's winning. I don't know how that ever started, you know. But we're victorious in this deal. We're working at shoulder to shoulder, even though I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. You know, these gentlemen here, Steve Orr, all these other people, Tennessee, all those men that were on the screen, some of you that I've heard share, Danny, that's here without his brother. How much guts does that take? You know, I can't go out here by myself. There's no way in hell. You know, I applaud you, you know, to come here and not hug that palm tree and be a part of that. You know, as all I wanted to do was not be alone. And when I'm in AA, I'm there. You know, I'm no longer alone. I'm with somebody. But it gets better, you know, because you guys told me that I got to take this outside and practice these principles in all my affairs. And I didn't even know how I was going to do that. My second ex-wife, when I was writing out my first four step, was about 12 pages of stuff. And my step monster was probably about 15. But so anytime that they talk to me, usually it goes all over me, you know. And somebody was talking the other day about how they were gritting their teeth and praying for somebody else. And my second ex-wife called one day and she wanted to talk about my son. He's out there doing the deal. And it was one of my huge fears. I had to let that go, you know. Even early on, I was calling him and screaming at him, I've done all this shit. You don't have to do this. You know, wake up. Realize what's going on. And it's kind of crazy. His house is on my way home, so I drive by it. I thought I had to drive by it every night. I try not to. I still do sometimes. But today, when he's not home, I just text him and tell him I love him. Please be careful, and I love you. Because I'm totally powerless over that deal. She calls me to talk to me about Hayden, my son. And she had one question. You know, and I kept thinking, if she ever calls and wants to speak to me again, man, I'm going to rip it into her, man. I'm going to tell her because he moved out when he was 18 and went to go live with her. And all this shit was her fault. All this stuff was her fault, right? Everything that's going on with him was her fault. And I was going to lay into her and let her know all about it. And she asked me the question about some inheritance, and I talked it, and then she asked me another opinion about him being out using, and I shouldn't say, she gave her opinion about it, and I thought it was formed in a question. I started to unleash like I thought I was going to, and I stopped myself, and I said, well, actually, your only question was this, so let me tell you what I think about that. And that's when I realized that psychic change was happening. I wasn't the person that I was. Because when I got here, I hated you guys, man. I hated you all with a passion. You know, I couldn't understand it. You know, I couldn't fathom this was something that the courts wanted me to do. I hated everybody, man. I hated my stepmom. I hated my ex-wife. I hated my life. It was my favorite thing. You know, going to work, I hate this freaking place. I hate all of you all. You know, I hate my job. I can't believe, you know, why can't these customers just leave me alone? Can't you all just go away? There's a guy named Davis out in California. And early on, he told me, he's like, I'm going to love you until you can learn to love yourself, Chad. And that was great because I started to learn that a little bit, you know. But what's crazy, around day 35, my secret sponsor passed away. His name was Frank. And I'm in this meeting called Sunday Kind of Love. And all of a sudden, people are sharing and they called on me. And I just bawled, man. I just started bawling. I didn't even know what to do with it. I didn't even know this guy. I'd been in like 2 Zoom meetings with him. And I was just bawling for the pain American League was feeling, for the loss that these gentlemen out in San Diego were feeling for this guy. He was one of those giants. His name was Frank. I'm probably going to cry right now because of it. And I didn't know what to do with those feelings, what those emotions were. Where is this coming from? Because all I know is all this hate and rage. And it's that relationship I started building. Wasn't the most important one, but I started building these relationships and I started feeling these emotions and these feelings. And man, I had to use my sponsor to work through that deal, you know? Where is this coming from? Like right now, you know, where did that come from? Because I didn't care about myself. How could I much less care about this guy that was just on Zoom, you know, that I didn't know? Sobriety's a trip. And as my sobriety evolves and I work through the steps, you know, the things that it gives to me and the things that I learn from it and the relationships that I get out of it are more than I could have ever imagined, you know, more than I could have ever believed in. That was hard on my sponsor. That was his sponsor for 35 years. And it took him a little while to get a sponsor. And the day that he got one, he called me. He's like, man, I've hated when you go to a meeting because I always hear these people say, you know, my name's Chad, I'm an alcoholic, and I have a sponsor. But you can never say, my sponsor has a sponsor. It was such a big deal to him to have that relationship, and I didn't understand it. You know, because it was about me and my relationship with him. It wasn't about what he needed, right? Even though he's selfishly given it up. And it dawned on me, man. It dawned on me that it's not just about me and the newcomer and the guy that's just coming in here. It's about every alcoholic. It's about that unconditional love. And so, the crazy thing was, not long after that, I had this customer. She's a rough one. She doesn't like to pay her bill and all this other crazy stuff. And every time that I hear her name or she comes in, I just, 1,000 character defects just flare up all at once. You know, it's like step 6 all over again. It's not just one, you know, I mean, it's like, what does she need from me? What is she going to take from me? Why can't she pay me? You know, it's impatience, it's greed, it's, you know, just all this stuff, man. And it's just glaring at me. And she came in not long ago. And I just told her, thanks, Kathy. You know, she had some excuse why she couldn't pay. I was like, that's okay. And then Thanksgiving rolls around. I'm sitting there at the dinner table. I went to be with my family, which that's an oddity right there in itself. spend Thanksgiving. I hadn't really, most Thanksgivings in the past, I was always locked up. When I had that list written out, it was like every December and November I was locked up. And we're sitting there, and there's all these desserts, and I was like, you know, there's this guy at this building downtown that's a security guard, and I bet he'd like some of this dessert, because nobody's going to be in that building today, and I'm in that building working a lot. So I fixed him up this big plate, and I went down there. His name's Lowell. Gave him those desserts. He was like, I can't believe you're in when I walked in. He's like, I can't believe you're in here again today. You're in here all the time. And I said, man, I just came to bring you this to you. And he was like, oh, thanks, man, that's great. He was so grateful. But what was weird, when I turned around to leave, I said, you know what, Lowell, I love you. I don't even know the dude. I don't know him that well. But I love him. Where the hell did that come from? Because I couldn't stand the dude 18 months ago. You know, he was a pain in the ass. I had to sign a piece of paper when I went into that building, you know. I mean, I had to do all this other stuff. And he was just another roadblock in my life. And all of a sudden, I'm taking this guy dessert. Telling him I love him, you know. Not long after that, my best friend from years ago comes in, and he has a stepdaughter, and he's leaving. I was like, Blake, I love you. And his stepdaughter was like, ooh. And I was like, man, I mean it. Man, I love that dude, you know. Can't tell you how many times he saved my life. So, anyways, I want to close on a couple deals. I don't know if I've used up my time or not, but I only got the other thing is I only have 18 months. 18 months and one day yesterday. 18 months yesterday. 18 months and one day today. Which, that's a great event, and that's a great fact, and I would have never ever thought it was possible, you know. I would have never thought that after I got 7 days, I just wanted 10. And after I got 30, I just wanted 31. But, and it keeps going. It keeps going. It's incredible. And I get invited to come to places like this. I really did think I was just setting up chairs. I wasn't expecting this. I might have got a haircut, you know. I might have shaved. I probably wouldn't have done either one, but you know, it was a possibility. You know, might have brought better shoes to make a better impression because I love AA and I want you guys to know that I do. You know, and that would be about the only reason that I would do that stuff. But the gentleman that's in my life that I share so much about. There's a story, and it's page 420. And it says acceptance. Acceptance was the answer. I must keep my magic magnifying mind on my acceptance and off my expectations. For my serenity is directly proportional to my level of acceptance. When I remember this, I can see I've never had it so good. Amen. Thank God. Pray. And I would normally say I stole that, but my sponsor says it every time he shares. He says he's never had it so good. And I believe it with all my heart. And so tonight I borrowed that, and I say that because I'm so grateful to him of, you know, giving so much time, but for loving me unconditionally. And that's what I've learned, standing on the shoulders of that giant to pass back to others. So anyways, guys, thanks for letting me share tonight. Thanks for letting me be a part of this deal. And I love all of y'all. If there's anything I can ever do for any of you, I'm sure I've got enough points I can fly anywhere. Thanks, guys.